Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, it's been only a few weeks since the landmark Supreme Court decision in Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. That's the one that overturned the ban on independent expenditures by corporations and unions and others during campaigns. And the ramifications of the ruling are still shaking out. Supporters say that this decision removes another roadblock from free speech. But detractors think it paves the way for unlimited corporate and union spending in elections, and that the voice of the everyman will be lost in the expensive shouting by the wealthy few. But then why a recent letter signed by more than 40 CEOs and executive leaders sent to both houses of Congress urging them to pass legislation to reduce the influence of the Supreme Court decision? Corporations fighting to limit their own influence? Let's find out more. Joining me now are Harry Kamen. He is a former chairman and CEO of MetLife, and Arne Pearson, the vice president for programming at the group Common Cause, one of those behind what they are calling fair elections legislation. Harry and Arne, welcome to WNYC. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for asking us.
Pleasure to be here.
Harry Kamen, can you give me some of MetLife's history by way of context first? How much money has your company been spending during your time as CEO or now on campaign donations or other election-related spending?
Campaign donations, as I recall, are prohibited from corporations. And so the only money that's been gathered for that purpose was through the political action committees that are authorized by law, which don't include corporate money, but contributions from employees through a committee managed by employees, which tries to act in used to try to act in a balanced way when I was around there. But of course, they had a notion of what was good for the corporation or bad for the corporation. But those were really, in the aggregate, small amounts. In fact, I just noticed this last presidential election, of the $1.5 billion spent, only $5 million of the entire amount came from PACs of corporations or unions. So it was a question of our lobbying had to do with for things that were of interest to us, what we thought was best for the policyholders as a group, for the industry as a group, for the nation as a group. And that was because of our large employee population and our 35 to 40 million policyholders, you know, the reason people paid attention to us.
Arne Pearson from Common Cause, what is this letter that Harry Kamen and others have signed?
Well, it's a letter to members of Congress urging them to include what we call Fair Elections, the Fair Elections Now Act, in any package of response to the Citizens United decision. And the Fair Elections Now Act is a bipartisan bill in both the Senate and the House that promises to change the way America pays for elections by matching small in-state donors with limited public funds for candidates who agree not to take large contributions.
And Harry, why did you sign this letter?
Well, I thought that was a good idea. You know, I retired a number of years ago, and of course I speak for myself, not for the company of which I was very proud to lead, that it's gotten excessive a little bit, the fundraising that's required. My wife and I have been fairly generous in contributions, but she says I'm the one that's the problem, because I get calls from all over the country, young people mostly who are running for office or want to run for office for the first time. Intelligent, educated, well-spoken, a surprising number of Iraqi war veterans, and they're all out there passing the hat. I feel it's kind of demeaning to just to get started in the process. They have to demonstrate to the parties a capacity to raise money by begging for it. from people. They don't beg, of course, literally, but we all know what it's all about. So the what Common Cause is dealing with a problem that a situation that precedes this case, but this case, as I understand it, allows for unlimited corporate contributions, not to the campaign, but to on behalf of a candidate, without any limit. I mean, MetLife has $350 billion of assets the last time I looked, and I know they won't be in that position. But those who are facing difficult legislative proposals, things that they think will be harmful to their interests as a corporation, as an organization, will have unlimited giving, whereas the law until now prohibited corporations from giving any cash to campaigns, and with very, Arnie would know better than I, very strong limits on what they could do outside of that.
And Arne from Common Cause, give our listeners a sense of who some of the other CEOs or retired CEOs like Harry who signed this letter. Some of them are surprising. People might be surprised just to hear Harry himself, a former CEO of MetLife, staking out this position.
Well, I actually don't have the list in front of me, but I know we have a variety of people on there, ranging from former CEO of StrideRight to, you know, some people who have held fairly high positions in former administrations on business issues. And we also we have in addition to that a wide range of groups that have signed on that care about a variety of issues that are pressing on the nation: health care, the environment, the economic crisis, who feel that they can't get the problems facing the nation solved in the current moneyed system, and that the Citizens United decision has just made things worse.
And from this letter that the CEOs have signed, quote, "Congress needs to spend its time working on the leading issues of the day, from reviving our economy to addressing our nation's energy crisis to reforming the health care system. And on those issues, Americans must have full confidence that Congress has acted in the best interest of the public, swayed by the merits of policy without regard to the interests of campaign contributors." But Tom in Seabright has a question about that. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, good morning. I worked my way through the majority opinion. It seemed to be that they rooted their decision in the First Amendment, a constitutional basis for their ruling. So would a simple act of Congress be able to undermine that ruling?
That's a great question. Arne, if this is a interpretation of the First Amendment, freedom of speech as expressed through campaign spending, that the Supreme Court came up with, how can Congress pass a law, this fair elections legislation that you're advocating, that would change it?
Well, what has happened is that this new activist majority on the Supreme Court has taken a position on those speech issues that has rolled back what the law of the land has been for almost 100 years. And they've taken the position that corporations have all of the same speech rights as individuals, and that despite the fact that they're allowed to amass billions of dollars based on the protections they get from law, that they can go and spend those profits to influence elections. Now, when Congress acts, their options are limited by this approach the court is taking. But there are options. There's a number of things that can be done to sort of limit and disclose what happens with the spending. But under all of those approaches, the current situation is just going to get worse. What the Fair Elections Now Act does is look at the lay of the land and sidestep the issue. So instead of trying to prevent corporations from spending money, which we cannot with this Supreme Court, the Fair Elections Now Act raises up the voices of ordinary Americans by matching their small contributions with public funds. So that lets candidates go out and get the resources they need to run vigorous competitive campaigns without spending all of their time dialing for dollars to the special interests that they're supposed to regulate.
And it was a very rare moment in the State of the Union address last week when President Obama actually kind of took the back of his hand to the U.S. Supreme Court for a ruling, this ruling. Here's 12 seconds of the president.
Last week, the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
And while the fact checkers may have decided that Justice Alito was right and the president was wrong on whether it actually includes foreign corporations, on the question of special interests, Harry Kamen, if the point of a corporation is bottom line to make money for its stockholders, and the Supreme Court ruling as stands gives CEOs a better chance to do that by increasing their influence with members of Congress, explain to me how this fair elections legislation would be in the interests of your old company, MetLife. Why would you do anything that would limit the influence of MetLife? And could the current executives of the company, in good conscience, support any limits when it would seem that their influence would grow as a result of freer spending?
Well, that's a question that, of course, I'll have to pass on to the current CEO. Since I can't speak for them. But I think the attitude in general of this company and of many great American companies is in the process of making money for shareholders to do the right thing by the public, by their customers, by the people who they depend upon to provide revenue for them. And if we think, and I think certainly, that this unlimited expenditures and campaigns is going to be bad for the country, they won't do it. I mean, there's a public interest involved. In addition to that, you might start a new competitive area for corporations, and that is to say, spending money in campaigns to gain influence. I think that's a bad thing for the country, and I think that most of my colleagues or former colleagues at MetLife would agree with me that we would not support what we thought was clearly in the worst interest of the country.
It's hard to make those judgments, though, often, I think, when you're in the thick of doing business and looking out for the interest of your company. Maybe there's a tendency to see things in the best interests of the country because they're in the best interest of your company. I mean,
usually they go together.
You think?
Yeah, if it's bad for America, it's not good for American corporations.
You ever come across this when you were a CEO? Something where you thought it might have been good for the country, good for the company, but not good for the country as a whole?
Well, I would say generally not. When it came to, say, what we thought were unfair taxes, we would lobby, to try to get unfairness removed, and succeeded. And you could say, well, if we pay lower taxes, then somebody else has to pay more. But that's a natural part of the process. I don't recall ever taking a position where we thought it was not in the best public interest to do what we were doing. I mean, we're always, of course, maybe it's a special situation because we have so many customers, but sometimes when we've done the wrong thing, we immediately respond and say to aggrieved policyholders, if you felt you were misled, just give us a call and you get your money back with interest.
Arne Pearson, I suspect that from Common Cause's perspective, it's not always that benign a relationship between the corporate interest and the public interest, and that's why you're concerned about the Supreme Court ruling?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bottom line is that we can't expect our elected officials to serve two masters. We elect people to represent the voters, but if their campaigns are bankrolled by entities that are not the voters, then you automatically have this conflict of interest in that plagues how they act. I mean, obviously corporations have a right to spend money to lobby to get their point across and what they think is the best interest, but that is different from having candidates depend on their money to run their campaigns or to live in fear that if they do something that the corporations don't like, they will spend millions of dollars to defeat them in the next election. And, you know, just on the foreign corporation point, actually, you know, Obama had it right, except for the loophole is foreign-owned domestic corporations, not foreign corporations themselves. And I have an email this morning, actually, that 160 subsidiaries of foreign-owned corporations have formed a lobbying group to try and stop closing that loophole.
Interesting. And I guess there's another question to ask there, too, which is, do you think American corporations somehow have America's best interests more at heart, you know, with international corporations? Harry Kamen, what do you think? Is Ford really more patriotic than Toyota inherently, for example?
Well, I don't think I can reach a judgment on that. I mean, we have a global economy, and many corporations do business abroad. We do business abroad, but you know, we're a home-based company, and so I don't know. I have to think about that one a little bit more, but I don't think there's an issue there. But I can see a concern where in some foreign countries there is a strong allegiance or strong government control of those corporations, and they might be less concerned about the interests of this country.
Well, I want to thank Harry Kamen, former CEO of MetLife, for coming on with us, and Arne Pearson from Common Cause. Mr. Kamen is one of the signatories of a letter that Common Cause is involved with to members of Congress, asking them to draft legislation to minimize the impact of the Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United within the confines of the First Amendment. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank
you.
You're
very welcome.
And we'll get an even broader view on what this means to America with Lawrence Lessig, director of the Safra Center for Ethics and General Free Speech Internet Guru from California. Many of you know his work. Lawrence Lessig in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Happy to have Lawrence Lessig back on the show, director of the Safra Center for Ethics and general free speech internet guru. Some of you may know his ideas for free speech on the internet and his books, including the most recent one, which is Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy. What you may not know is that Lawrence Lessig has also launched a movement that he calls Change Congress. And Professor Lessig, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be back.
Change Congress, along with Common Cause, the group we just heard from in the last segment, one of the groups behind the fair elections legislation we just heard from. And at the same time, you are a huge proponent of free speech in essentially every form, and proponents of this Supreme Court decision say it's a free speech decision. So, big question to kick things off. In your point of view, does money not equal speech?
Well, I think that the objective of the First Amendment should be to include the widest range of people arguing about what's good for the nation. And I don't think the issue involved in campaign funding is about whether corporations or anybody should be allowed to speak. I think the issue is whether members of Congress develop a dependency, as Arne put it. Do they have a loyalty that's separate from the loyalty the framers imagined they would have, which is the loyalty to their constituents, to the people, dependency upon the people? And I think the problem we've got right now is the system of funding elections creates this dependency that's different from the one that a democracy depends upon. So I want to see an alternative to the existing system, which is not an alternative that tries to silence any particular speaker, but an alternative that tries to create the right incentives in our democracy, which is members worrying about what their constituents want and not what their campaign funders want.
And just to put the cherry on top of your title, I think I identified you as being with the Safra Center for Ethics. I didn't say that that's at Harvard University, so just to be clear, Lawrence Lessig at Harvard these days. And you write in a recent essay that the court's decision does not give enough credence to the central point of an election, the institutional integrity of the democratic process, as you put it. So why is the integrity of an election changed if people are open and above board about where their money is coming from, because the proponents of this say disclosure is the main thing, not the spending itself?
Well, I think disclosure is essential, but what disclosure does is it reinforces people's view that the reason members of Congress are deciding what they're deciding is because they want to make sure they continue to get the money they need to be reelected. So under the existing system, we all know the extraordinary amount of money that, for example, Max Baucus received from the healthcare industry, or we know the extraordinary amount of money that John Campbell in California received from used car dealers before he inserted an exemption from the Consumer Financial Protection Agency Act that took used car dealers out of that statute. We know that, but the problem is, once we know that, we believe that the reason Congress is deciding what Congress is deciding is because of the money rather than what their constituents want. And so what I think we need, and this is, I think, what Common Cause has been arguing for 30 or 40 years, is a system for funding elections so that members can worry about their constituents and not worry about their funders.
Listeners, you want to talk free speech with Professor Lawrence Lessig, 212-433-WNYC. Reactions to the Supreme Court ruling, whether this increases your faith in government or anything else, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we played a clip earlier from the State of the Union address where the president lectured the Supreme Court a little for allowing foreign corporations to influence American campaigns. You've studied the effects of money in politics. Do you think that individuals are really that bought and sold? Can foreign influence work in the same way as the corporate influence you were just describing in the healthcare process?
Well, I think that the mechanics of exactly how it works is still extremely murky, and we don't actually see of course, it would be a crime if it were direct, and so you don't actually see people demonstrating that they're taking money and changing their votes in response to the money because they don't want to go to prison, or those that do it too openly do go to prison, and we've seen that, like Randy Duke Cunningham or Representative Jefferson. But what I think happens is that in the interstices of legislation, when tax code gets written and has complicated tax benefits to certain corporations, or trade laws get written that have certain trade benefits to certain corporations, there's no surprise that behind those exemptions or those special deals have been very, very careful lobbying by corporate interests that want this benefit. So there was one study at the University of Kansas that calculated the return on investment from lobbying to change one statute. It was a job creation statute. And they calculated the return on investment to be 22,000% because of the benefit they received because of this small change in the law brought about by lobbying from these corporations. So there's no doubt that it has, in effect, at least the effect in the margin. But what my point is even if you thought it had no effect, what we know is that it leads people to believe that money buys results. And what that does is lead them to be cynical about the democratic process, to disengage from the democratic process. And if we disengage from this process, that leaves the fox in charge of the hen house. It leaves a world where lobbyists have even more power, and the money, campaign money, has even more power. And the total failure of President Obama to achieve the objectives that he was elected to achieve is solely because of the power of the status quo to stop these reforms. And that's because of the way we fund elections.
And so how much do you think that this fair elections legislation that you and Common Cause and Harry Kamen, former CEO of MetLife, who was just on, are all backing, would actually change? There's a 4-to-1 matching donation in the proposal from a federal program. I mean, would that be enough to counter the wealth of, say, a Goldman Sachs?
None of us know. I think, though, we have to take this first step. It is a critical first step to begin to restore integrity to the system. Because if we had a Congress elected under the Fair Elections Now Act, and they did something stupid, whatever reason you could think that they did whatever stupid thing they did, because they were too liberal or they were too conservative or they just didn't know enough about the matter, the one thing we could no longer believe is it was because of the money. Now, the big fear about the decision of the Supreme Court, Citizens United, is that it now opens up such an extraordinary amount of potential resources in these campaigns, that it could be that the benefit created by the Fair Elections Now Act gets swamped by the new resources that are brought into campaigns. I mean, I saw someone yesterday give a talk where they estimated that if corporations spent just 1% of their profits on political campaigns, that would be twice the amount spent in all political campaigns every year. So a very small amount of this money now devoted to politics could have a stifling effect relative to what we're already spending. So I think we can't know whether this is going to be enough, but I do think, you know, it's like a patient who's come in and just been hit by a bus. We've got to stabilize the patient and at least get on the path towards making sure this democracy can recover. And my view is Congress right this minute should be enacting this statute, much more important than any of the other changes that are being discussed, including the changes to effectively overturn Citizens United.
So I asked the listeners whether the Supreme Court ruling increases or decreases their faith in government, and most of the people calling up are agreeing with you and saying it decreases their faith in government. Robert in Manhattan says increases. Robert, thanks for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi, yeah, it definitely does. I'm in favor of the free speech as open and wide as possible, and I really am continually mystified why people such as the professor you have on now, the guy from Common Cause, they speak as if corporations, whether it's the CEOs or others, are Martians. I mean, corporations are made up of human beings. And in our case, we're talking particularly about Americans, hundreds and thousands, millions of human beings, from the CEOs down to the guy driving the delivery truck. They're not some separate entity. You could say the same for special. I mean, we're all constituents. We're all voters. The people who work for corporations are voters. And I can contribute as an individual, and I have. I contribute to candidates in other states. So even that is not a valid thing to say, well, it's you're only your immediate constituent. I can contribute to political campaigns all around the country. So to make this distinction as if, I mean, I think it stems from a certain blindness and an anti-business, anti-corporate bias. It's like, well, yeah, people like employment, but they don't like employers. But employers, corporate, they're people. They're Americans. They're not Martians.
Now, Robert, stay there. We're going to take another caller with you, Joel in Westchester, who has some thought on whether corporations and people should be equated. Joel, you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I don't think they should be equated because I'm waiting for corporations to be able to give blood or organs. That's when they should be considered to be people.
Robert, you want to come back to Joel?
Well, yeah. I mean, that seems like such an obvious one. I've worked for some Fortune 500 companies, and we gave huge amounts of blood, and we had Red Cross drives. Who does Joel or anyone else think make up the corporation? Yes, it's an organization of people, but just like a state or a county or a town or a church or anything, it's an organization of people. When I worked for corporations, I was encouraged by my employer to go out and give blood, to donate to the Red Cross. I mean, technically, yes, a corporation is an organization, but it only exists as an organization of people who can give blood.
Yeah, but I'm talking about just one. Now, as soon as it is one person giving blood, that's when it is a person, not a group of people.
But in terms of its role in society, Joel, the arguments that Robert's making?
In terms of its role in society, it does have a role, and the lobbying takes care of it more than it should.
Lawrence Lessig, you want to get back in here with Robert and Joel?
Yeah, so the first point is, with respect to what Robert said, again, I'm not against corporations having a right to speak, and I think that this is a big distraction to think that the issue is about whether we should allow corporations the right to speak. But I will say, you know, the fact that corporations are made up of individuals doesn't necessarily mean that we have to think of them as having their own special right to speak. Just like the fact that corporations are made up of individuals who have the right to vote doesn't mean that we think the corporation should have the right to vote. It's a separate question. Now, the issue, though, is not whether these people are allowed to speak in the political environment. I think they should. The question is, if we create a campaign environment where it's obvious to everyone that the dominant influence of either corporate speech or big contributions by individuals means that representatives don't care about what their constituents want first, they care about what the contributions will be first, then we've distorted the democracy our framers created. So that's why I think the issue is, how do we create an independent Congress, a Congress that can do its job without worrying about the funders, and then let anybody say whatever the heck they want? And that would be a vibrant democracy that at least we could be confident was being driven by what the framers wanted, the people's view, and not some foreign prince or some power by private corporations.
Robert, do you want to get back in one more time? Maybe we should go all the way and let AIG run for office.
No, well, what's good, one thing is I clearly have a different view, because I think, basically speaking, and I think the founders thought this very much, because they were very much about private property and enterprise, what's good for business, they used to say, General Motors is good for the USA. Well, what's good for business is good for the USA. So again, it's like, you know, they need to, they're one constituency, and I think it's very cynical to think that our representatives are swayed overwhelmingly by the corporations, even if there's huge corporate contributions. They take into account the guys who aren't working for corporations and issues. They don't just do what the lobbyists or the corporations want. So that's incredibly cynical in the other direction.
Robert,
nobody has to think that they're swayed completely, and nobody has to be that deeply cynical about it. But, for example, if you were standing before a judge who was deciding whether you were going to go to jail or you're going to have to pay a $50 million judgment in a certain case, and I told you that that judge had received a $100 contribution from the other side, personal contribution, you wouldn't have to believe that the judge was totally swayed by the $100. You would demand that the judge be making the decision without worrying about how much money he's getting from the other side. And that's all that we're talking about here. We just need judges or politicians or legislators who can do their job independently of these private influences. And if we had that, happy that they listen to whatever they want to listen to, just like I'm happy the Supreme Court listens to whatever argument the Supreme Court listens to. But the great thing about the Supreme Court is nobody credible could believe the Supreme Court decided its decision in Citizens United because of the money. And I want there to be a Congress where nobody credible can think that Congress decides what it's deciding because of the money. That's not to say we have to be cynical about it. It's just saying we should aspire to the same ideals the framers had about independence. And I, with all respect, due respect, Robert, I spend my whole life studying what the framers thought about these issues. They would have been appalled at the system where members of Congress spend 30% to 70% of their time running around the country trying to get money from private interests so they can get back to Congress. That is a complete abomination of the independence they imagined they were establishing. And we need to be respecting the kind of government they set up and reestablish that independence.
And Robert, I'm going to leave it here because we're out of time, but keep calling and speaking up, okay?
Thanks.
Thank you. Before you go, Lawrence Lessig, 30 seconds. You call for a constitutional amendment. That's a heavy political lift. What would your constitutional amendment say?
Well, I think we've got to start this process, and it wouldn't be to reverse Citizens United. It would be to secure to Congress the power to protect its own independence, to make sure that we could believe in its judgment and believe it was making judgments for the merits and not for the fundraisers. And so if you go to our site, change-congress.org, tomorrow, in fact, you will see the process that we're calling for to begin this call for a constitutional amendment.
Lawrence Lessig, founder of the group Change Congress, professor at the and director of the Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard, and author of books including Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, artists in the Office, author Summer Pierre on how to survive your day job. And we will take calls from artists, writers, musicians, and others on what you do with your real self from 9 to 5. Stay with us.